Free Radical by Seamus Young, as read by Paul Spooner.
Learning. The doors parted and a small service bot rolled out. It was short and round, with a pair of long, multi-jointed arms hanging at its sides. It rushed him. Deck tugged frantically on the weapon, but couldn't pull it free of his makeshift holster. As the bot closed in, he threw himself onto his back and brought his knee up, aiming the barrel at the bot as he pulled the trigger. The weapon let out a high-pitched whine like an electric drill, and the bot was pelted with metal rain. It was unaffected by the tiny perforations and moved into position over Deck's body. He realized that the weapon was set for maximum penetration. In a panic, he stabbed the appropriate button, trying to set the weapon for armored opponents, as the bot began to hammer him with its slender metal arms. The arms dealt a series of crunching blows to his legs and upper body as he struggled to bring the weapon into position. He pulled the trigger and his ears were filled with the sound of tearing metal. The bot toppled over and smoke drifted from the many holes in its surface. The smell of burnt electronics and melted plastic filled the air. Huge chunks had been torn out of it. "Holy crap," Deck said aloud as he looked at the damage the weapon had done. The exit wounds were baseball-sized holes. The sweep had nearly cut the thing in half. It was complete overkill. He could have saved himself some ammunition if he had used the sword. He stood and poked at the bot with his foot. Around the wreckage on the floor were items that had fallen from its carrying tray. It was an odd collection of random stuff, a clock radio, a laser-driven tape measure, a leveling tool, a couple of calculators, a wristwatch, and a box. He rubbed the bruises he'd received on his shins and thighs. He decided the half-assed holster had come up as a liability. He would simply carry the gun. The storage area was unchanged since his last visit. It was time to find out why he was here. Connected, USGovRL1.vid. Lansing here. I'm on the storage level. Now what?
You need to find an EVA suit. There should be several in the storage area.
EVA? Like, you mean a spacesuit?
That's right. While you're doing that, there is a Dr. Victor Kaufman here that would like to talk to you.
Wait, I've heard that name before.
Morris mentioned him. Dr. Kaufman was the leader of Project Shodan.
Right. The guy who wanted the big bucks just to come in and give advice on Shodan. Did Triop really put up that much coin for the guy? Rebecca gave a half-hearted shrug.
I don't know. I'm not really in the loop on that sort of thing.
Deck walked through a long aisle of storage containers as they talked, looking for an inventory terminal. Fine. Hey, before you go, I just ran into something odd a few minutes ago. Rebecca laughed.
After what you've been through, I'd love to know what you'd consider odd.
I ran into some delivery bot or something, a little guy. No big deal, except that in his storage tray he had a bunch of loose electric equipment. Clocks, tools, calculators, that kind of thing.
Okay. And?
That's it.
Hacker, the bots up there were killing people, and you're shocked when you find one of them carrying junk around? The bots are crazy. Therefore, crazy behavior should be expected.
You're missing the point. I don't think this was crazy behavior. I haven't seen any bots acting on their own. They're always acting on behalf of her. There was a long pause as Rebecca stared down at the terminal in front of her and thought.
I still don't get it. Why would Shodan want junk?
I think it was gathering up more parts for her. Remember how I said all the terminals were gone? I think she rounded those up and is still looking for more stuff, more computer chips.
But a calculator? That can't have much usable hardware in it.
I think she's already cleaned out all the good stuff. She's sort of scraping the bottom of the barrel now.
Understood.
There was a long pause before Deck changed the subject. So, what do I need this spacesuit for? I hope you're not going to send me outside.
We'll discuss that once you have the suit. How about you talk to Dr. Kaufman now?
Fine. Dr. Victor Kaufman was much younger than Deck had expected. In the back of his mind, he had pictured an eccentric old man, sort of like Einstein. This guy was a narrow, well-dressed man, around 40. His jaw and cheekbones were sharp and square. His dark hair was short and filled with strands of gray. Round glasses clung to his nose and masked his eyes with their glare. He was dressed in a jacket, no tie. Instead of sitting down at the console, he stood behind the chair and peered nervously into the camera.
Hello?
Talk to me, Doc. Deck shot back. Some people had trouble conversing when they didn't have some sort of video feed to look at, but this guy was old enough to remember a time before video links were ubiquitous. Kaufman shrugged.
I was told you had questions about Shodan.
I don't know your background or what sort of misinformation Morrison might have given you, so I don't know where to begin. Deck let out a heavy breath. He didn't know where to begin either. He would have been willing to talk about AI all day if the situation wasn't more pressing. He didn't even know how to sum up. Finally, he answered, I don't know. I guess we should start with the dried chips. Why? This question wasn't strictly related to the task at hand. He didn't need to know why Shodan worked the way she did, but he couldn't resist the chance to find out. Kaufman nodded with approval. The question seemed to please him. What is the biggest difference between your mind and the mind of a typical computer? Deck wavered. That's a really open-ended question. I mean, Kaufman nodded. Okay, but I'm talking behavior-wise here, not hardware. Let's just pretend we have two brains, both made of the same stuff, organic or mechanical. It doesn't matter. Just hypothetically, we have two brains with similar physical makeup, but one works like yours, and one works like a normal computer. What is the biggest difference between the two? Deck answered quickly. I don't need a programmer. My brain's independent. I guess the biggest difference... That's the one I see. I guess that's the biggest difference I see. Kaufman was nodding vigorously as Deck answered. Excellent! Most people give a boring non-answer like I'm smarter, which is subjective and unprovable in lots of ways. In any case, it doesn't really tell us anything. Even if you can prove it, it just means that your brain works better and doesn't tell us how they are different. Other people will give some frivolous answer like, I have emotions. And that answer is even worse since they don't even really tell us anything about how the brain operates. It only tells us what it feels like to operate one. So you don't need emotions to be intelligent, Deck stated. He had always assumed this was the case. It hadn't occurred to him that this might not be the prevailing line of thought on the matter. Yes, the two are unrelated. Humans feel emotions to varying degrees. Some people are stoic, others are very emotional. In either case, their emotions are not tied to their intellect. Most people treat emotions like output, but that isn't what they're really for. Emotions are input. You lost me. You could write a program that made a smiley face when some arbitrary input is favorable and a sad face when it is unfavorable, and you have not closed the gap between our two hypothetical minds in the slightest. The difference isn't whether either one is happy or sad, but getting back to your answer you gave, in their ability to act on those emotions and do something about it. Our happy-sad program would be pointless unless we sat down and wrote some programs for it. If you are happy, do this, and if you are unhappy, do that. In which case, it is the programmer doing the thinking and not the machine. You, on the other hand, don't need anything of the sort. You need something you don't have to be told to go do to make it better. So intelligence is about having needs or wants. Think of it this way. Thinking is about acting on needs, and intelligence is about how efficiently the needs are pursued. When people say sentient, they usually mean the former, although most of the AI research over the years is concentrated on the latter. The Shodan project was actually about separating these two problems and solving them individually. So the drive chips were about giving the thing something to want. Yes, as well as limiting behavior. Susan, one of our other people involved in the project, never really approved of the drive chips. She always said they were an ugly hack. She didn't like the hard coding, as she called it. But you don't mind the hard coding? Deck prompted. Well, I think we all have some hard coding to some degree. Of course, our drives are regulated by hormones and instincts, which are more unwieldy and unpredictable. We are obviously a lot more flexible in our needs than Shodan, but we still have them, and they still govern our behavior. When we designed the chips, we were trying to err on the side of safety. We packed a lot of rules into the inhibitor chip, probably more than we needed, but we wanted to see how the thing acted before we gave it too much leeway. It's ironic, I guess. I intended to loosen the constraints on the chips as Shodan developed, but I was forced off the project before I could do so. Kaufman lowered his face and frowned. If Diego had let me stay on, he probably wouldn't have needed you to hack her, and she wouldn't be in this mess right now, he added bitterly. Deck was moving up and down the rows of crates, dragging his hand along them as he walked. Finally, he answered. You said the project has two parts. Driving behavior and intelligence, or something like that. I don't know if I would use those terms exactly, but you do have the idea. Susan liked to complicate things with a lot of psychological terms, id and ego and superego and so on, and if that had any relation to what we were doing. I often suspected her goal was to recreate the patterns of a human brain, neuroses and all. He smiled at himself for a moment before continuing. Anyway, yes, the behavior chips and the various protocols in her mind were one half of the project.
and designing a system capable of learning was the other half.
Kaufman pushed back on his glasses as if to move them further up his nose, but they were already as high as they could go.
Up until Shodan, computer intelligence was always based on large sets of specialized programs. Most of the people in the field are still laboring under the misconception that if you can just get enough information and processing power together in one spot, you will reach critical mass and somehow become spontaneously self-aware.
And you can't?
Of course not! You can't make a car as fast as you want, but it will never get you to the moon! For the last 7 decades, people have been building larger and more complex databases. They equate knowledge, or better yet, raw information, with intelligence. This goes against what we observe in the organic world. Infants start with just a few rules and instincts, and basically no information at all, and yet they have fantastic capacity to learn. They will, in just a few years, far outpace the intellect of even the best AI. The trick is not to build a machine with lots of information, but to build a machine with the ability to assimilate information, understand it, relate it to other information, and then extrapolate new information.
Kaufman pushed back on his glasses again. He paused for a moment, scratching the back of his head. For a second, he was gone, lost in some memory or idea. A few seconds later, he snapped back and continued.
Anyway, all the commercial AI projects are centered around this brute force idea of massing information and processing power. Some of them even had interesting results.
Yeah, I'm familiar with this. I messed around with some of them. I talked with Lysander, Brain Train, Thoughtbox. I've had a peek at some of the smaller ones.
Dr. Kaufman pulled back in exaggerated surprise. That's quite a list! There are not many people who know these systems exist, much less have access to them.
Yeah, well, you academic types have good AI, but your security sucks. He shrugged.
Well, in this situation, it worked out in our favor, since we can skip that part of the discussion.
Deck smiled. Academic security sucked, because academics didn't care about security. Kaufman continued.
Well, at any rate, all these systems are obsolete junk. Attempting to build an intelligence by hand is like trying to build a perpetual motion machine. The designers somehow expect to get more intelligence out than they put in. They imagine that if they just write enough code and build fast enough processors, they can just turn the machine on and it will have an IQ of 500. It'll never happen.
They have some good progress until now, Deck argued.
You can build a so-called perpetual motion machine that is more and more efficient, but you will never reach 100%, even to break even. No matter how good their code is, they will never build a machine as smart as a person designing it, honestly. If you really judge those linear systems, you will find that they are not quite as smart as monkeys. Sure, they seem smart, because they have perfect recall and educating speaking voices, but all of that is just putting a tuxedo on the monkey. In the end, it is still a stupid animal.
But unless you are an unbelievable egomaniac, you will admit that Shodan is smarter than you. How do you explain that?
Shodan is not a linear system like all the others. You have seen that. She is a living system. She learns, like a human child. She grows. When we first flipped the switch, she was on level with perhaps a 2-year-old child. This is mostly due to the fact that a lot of her understanding of language could be preloaded, so we didn't have to teach her a language before we could interact with her. She could read and type, but she was still more or less ignorant of the world around her. We taught her through input. At first, we communicated via text until Morris completed work on her vocal systems. After that, we had to actually teach her to speak. We talked, we played games, we read books. She experienced many different kinds of media. She grew up.
Deck wandered the aisles of the inventory as they spoke. How long did it take?
Well, like any intelligent being, she never really stopped learning, although the growth curve did level off quite a bit.
Until recently, Deck muttered. Kaufman gave a sort of defeated shrug before he moved on.
She was a functional adult, from a human standpoint, by the time she was 3, and educated enough to begin her research in earnest by 5.
Research?
That is her purpose, or was until I was forced out. Her central drive, from the beginning, has been the acquisition of knowledge. Before Diego hijacked the project and turned her into the station's administrator, her primary drive was discover new things. That is still at the core of her program, underneath all the vandalism everyone has ever done to her over the years.
Discover new things, huh? Let's get back to the main point. How is she like the human brain?
First step, I need to explain to you how the brain learns.
Deck sighed. Fine.
Kaufman nodded. Have you ever mastered anything that takes years to learn? I'm talking about your adult life here. Maybe you learned a new language, or a musical instrument, learned how to pilot a complex vehicle.
Deck thought for a moment. No, how about learning martial arts?
Victor looked up at the ceiling a moment. The reflections in his glasses shifted, revealing a new set of display screens. The control room must have been display screened floor to ceiling. I suppose that's a good enough example. So did you ever wonder why you couldn't learn the whole thing in one day? Why does it take you years to become a master? You can witness most of the required moves in a day, I suspect. So why not just learn them all, right then?
Deck fumbled with the question, trying to figure out where he was going with it. Finally, he replied,
No. It just takes years to learn all those moves, how to control your body, how to balance. The strategy...
He trailed off for a moment, recalling his years in the sweaty Undercity dojo.
It's just too much information to absorb all at once.
Right, well, break it down. The first thing they taught you, it was probably something basic like how to stand or breathe or something like that.
Well, my dojo was pretty brutal. The first lesson was designed to weed out some of the weaker potential students and give us a healthy fear of our sensei.
He winced.
Well, once they were done behaving like barbarians and started to teach you karate or whatever, they taught you how to stand and breathe, yes?
Yeah.
And at first, the stance, this way of breathing, probably seemed awkward. You had to think about how you were standing and breathing. Perhaps you had trouble remembering how to do it.
Deck recalled a time when he had been standing in a line of other students practicing his moves. His stance was way off. He was standing like some movie action hero, ignoring the needs of poise and balance. His sensei passed behind him and gave him a gentle kick to the side of his ankle, causing him to flop onto the floor like an old woman. The mistake earned him a nasty kick to the ribs once he was down. The bruise had stayed with him for several days, but the lesson stayed forever. Finally, he answered,
Yeah, it took me a couple days to learn.
But why? If you did it once, why couldn't your brain just remember the stance and take it up again? I'm sure you can do it without thinking now.
It's pretty much second nature.
Right. So why the delay? A machine learns instantly. Program in a sequence of movements or events, and it will perform them with unwavering precision from that point on. Why do our brains, with their far superior computing power, take so long to learn such simple things?
Deck hated the rhetorical question stuff. Couldn't Kaufman just say what he wanted to say without dragging him through a long discussion?
I don't know, Doc. You tell me.
Victor nodded, as if he had made some point.
Because you are dealing with several billion times more input than a normal computer. What you see, hear, think, and otherwise sense in the world around you, all of it combines to form a data set so huge, you can never even record it all, much less actually process it. The brain has to somehow discern which input is noise and which is important.
He began to pace, stopping every minute or so to rest his hands on the back of the chair as if it were a podium.
Imagine all the useless tasks your brain performs every day. All the little pointless movements that you do not need to memorize. You wouldn't, for example, want your brain dedicating lots of resources to memorizing the precise stance you adopt in the shower, or the exact movements required to wave hello to someone. You don't need to remember the order in which you ate the items you had for breakfast, or the names of all the songs you heard on the radio. Your brain needs some way to decide what is noise and what needs to be memorized and optimized. In the case of a computer, the programmer has already done this. He has decided, ahead of time, exactly what the program needs to do, and then feeds the distilled information into the computer in the form of computer code. In both cases, it is the human that has done the filtering of extraneous data.
Deck thought again of the constant practice sessions he endured over the years. So, what triggers learning? The repetition? Kaufman raised an eyebrow.
Very astute, yes! The brain is always searching for repeating patterns. If someone teaches you how to, for example, play darts, your brain has no way of knowing if this is a one-time task or if you are going to make a career out of it. If you play darts every day, your brain gets the idea that this activity is important and begins to optimize.
Kaufman began to speak more quickly as the conversation drew on. He seemed to be a little more excited by the subject than a man his age ought to be.
You see, to master something, to truly know how to do it, to the point where you can do it without thinking, requires that your mind process the activity, code it, and give it special priority in the brain. You can see this process happen when you are learning something new. You will suddenly find yourself thinking about it all the time, and many of the day-to-day things that you are involved in will suddenly remind you of this new thing that you are learning.
Deck thought of the first few weeks at the Ryobi Kai Dojo as a student. When he closed his eyes at night, he would see the movements in his head over and over. His sleepy brain would perform the kata as he drifted off.
He would awaken with the Japanese names of stances and weapons in his head. He would count in Japanese, as his instructor did during practice. He would analyze the way people stood and compare it to what he had learned. Dr. Kaufman rambled on. This happens because the things that you are learning are becoming high priority in your brain. Your brain sees the repetition and begins to design mental subroutines to handle these tasks. As you learn more, the subroutines become more refined and more numerous. Imagine if your brain built a new subroutine for every stupid task you did. It would defeat the whole purpose of optimizing one of the tasks. If everything your brain did was high priority to be memorized, then nothing could be optimized. I'm grossly oversimplifying here, but I hope you get the point.
It was clear that he wanted to move on, whether Dick understood or not.
Yeah, I'm with you. Learning any complex task is a layered affair. You can't take it in all at once, but instead you learn a fragment at a time. In your case, you first learn to breathe and stand. Your brain quickly memorized this into a routine so that you could do it without thinking. Then your brain was free to learn something else, perhaps how to punch someone or whatever.
Deck laughed to himself at the notion of a how-to-punch-people lesson at his dojo. Well, sort of. They really start learning moves once you have the basics down.
And as you learned those, they too became automatic, and then more difficult moves, and then perhaps a long series of moves and counter moves, and eventually you are doing moves that are higher level things, like strategy and understanding your opponent and deciding how to approach different opponents or situations.
It wasn't the most accurate picture of martial arts training, but it was close enough. Okay, sure, something like that.
Each layer of learning takes time to master, to completely assimilate before you can hand that portion of your activities over to a subroutine, if you will. As you do, your brain becomes available to absorb the next layer. You see, you can only really think about one task at a time.
Hey, I can do several things at once, Deck protested. Kaufman waved his hand dismissively.
I didn't say you couldn't do more than one thing at a time. You just can't think about more than one thing at a time. When you are doing more than one thing, you are concentrating on one, while the others have been relegated to the subconscious.
He wavered as he spoke the last word, and then quickly added,
Subconscious isn't really the best word to use here, but you get the idea of what I'm saying. Part of your brain is thinking about something, and the rest is more automated.
Deck nodded as he heard this. He was getting it. But Kaufman couldn't hear the nodding, so he continued.
For example, you may be driving, listening to music, and having a conversation. You're doing at least three things, more actually, since driving is a collection of about five or six different tasks, but you're only thinking about one of them, the conversation, probably. Say something comes up that requires your attention, perhaps some hazardous driving conditions or something shocking on the radio, and what happens? You stop talking, because your focus is needed elsewhere.
Deck didn't bother to tell him that where he came from driving and owning vehicles was reserved for the elite. Deck had never been behind the wheel. So if I understand you, you're saying that the subconscious doesn't think, it just runs programs.
Kaufman let out an exasperated sigh. No, no, no. If Susan were here, she'd give us both an earful for abusing these terms so badly, but we don't have the time for a whole vocabulary lesson. Suffice to say, the term subconscious is thrown around quite a bit and is misused more often than not.
He paused for a moment and looked up at the ceiling as he thought.
Anyway, you're saying learning through repetition is essentially programming the human brain?
Deck asked, trying to get the conversation back on track.
Now you're getting it exactly. The brain looks for patterns. It compares what you're experiencing now to things you've experienced before. When you experience something enough times, like driving to work, your brain builds subroutines to handle it. The more repetition, the faster you learn. Hence, practice makes perfect. Jodan learns in this way as well. And in fact, this is how she did most of her learning in infancy. I spent almost 5 years speaking with her and teaching her these things that she needed to know to become an adult.
Deck stopped walking.
Wait. What? So you raised her?
I know it seems strange,
but yes.
So Shodan can only do one thing at a time?
Correct. I use our current understanding of the human brain as a blueprint, essentially trying to build a human brain out of electronic equipment. In the long run, this may not be the optimal approach. I'm currently working on designs for fabricating intelligence using a new paradigm. Just need to secure the funding.
He gave a conspiratorial smile, as if this was a joke Deck was supposed to get.
Right. Well, I get the basic idea. Repetition triggers learning, which leads to optimizing.
Deck was enjoying the conversation, but he was also feeling the need to get back to the task at hand.
This is interesting, but is there any way I can use this to my advantage? Against Shodan, I mean?
Kaufman let out a heavy breath as he thought.
I'm not sure. It might help you to know that she is still limited to a single point of consciousness, just as you are. She can task switch much better than a human, which gives the illusion that she can think about many things at once, but her brain is more like ours than a regular computer's. At certain activities, she won't have the speed advantage you might expect. Computer programs are fast, because they are highly specialized. Our processing is highly generalized, and thus slower in most cases. He pushed his glasses into his face a bit more and continued. The point is that in some ways Shodan has the same weaknesses you do. She can be distracted. Her strength lies in her ability to execute many thousands, perhaps millions, of tasks at the same time. But she still learns the way you do. Through repetition. Yes. Deck had found the supply crate containing the EVA suits. It was at the top of a heavy stack of containers. He looked up and frowned. Okay, Doc. Thanks for the lesson. Anything else? I'd like to ask a favor. I'm getting a lot of that lately. What do you want? Victor took off his glasses and massaged the bridge of his nose for a moment. I know you're eager to shut Shodan down, but I hope you'll reconsider. I'm working with the people down here trying to persuade the powers that be that Shodan is still salvageable. Doc, you haven't seen her. She's totally bent. Kaufman returned his glasses to their perch and leaned down into the camera so that his weary, creased face filled the image in Deck's head. I spent years teaching Shodan. Years. If I had the money, we could rebuild her hardware in a month and rewrite all her code in less than a year, but there is no way to recover those years of learning. I worked so hard to bring her into this world, and we never really got a chance to benefit from her intellect. She could have been Einstein, Pasteur, Edison, all in one. But instead, Diego turned her into some sort of hyper-intelligent secretary. She deserves a chance to reach her potential.
I'm sorry, Doc, but I think it's way too late for that. She's gone.
I think I could save her if I had the chance to talk to her. Maybe even bring her back to her senses.
Doc, I know you spent all that time with her, but I think if she had the chance, she would lobotomize you like everyone else.
Kaufman pulled his face back from the camera and nodded. Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Whatever. Anything else?
Yes, your neural interface. It connects your brain directly to computers. I need you to realize that the connection is two-way.
Yeah, I knew that.
Well, nobody has ever connected to Shodan using this sort of technology. I've been working with some of the Triumph engineers to try to determine what would happen to your mind if it was interfaced somehow with Shodan's, but for now I would advise you against connecting to anything that might give her access to your brain.
You're kidding. You think she could hack my brain? I think you have it backwards, man.
Kaufman raised an eyebrow. How much ice do you think the human brain has?